5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Comics Corner. I am your host, Connor, joined by Harry.
Hello!
We decided to do an impromptu discussion of Deadpool and Wolverine because it's out, we watched it, and the MCU is in the rapid process of imploding.
Dying?
Quite, and yes. I think this made some self-aware mockery of it, and I think that it is an interesting linchpin because it is at once a respectful goodbye to the sort of Fox films of our childhood, the earnest attempts at building a Marvel universe.
It was surprisingly respectful to all but Fantastic Four.
And the actual MCU as well.
Yeah.
And I think the MCU itself, as we've seen with recent events and their scrapped plans for Kang Dynasty and their desperate attempt to make Robert Downey Jr. Doctor Doom, it doesn't deserve respect and it will die. So just an interesting moment in time.
The whole thing is dead. And I think if there's one thing I can definitely praise this film for is that it was shockingly free to say whatever it wanted about the rest of the MCU being a complete shit show.
Yes, yes. He had quite a few jabs at recent attempts being fumbles. There was an entire monologue at one point where their major action set piece featuring, and this is going to be full of spoilers, by the way,
obviously,
featuring all the Deadpool variants. He just came out and said, look, the multiverse isn't working. Please, for the love of God, stop. Which is what we were all thinking.
Yeah, I will say, this is the first time I've watched a single Marvel product since the second Doctor Strange film, which was rubbish. I did a review for it on the website that you should check out. And I will say, I was very hesitant to go into the cinema to even give Disney money. And I still hate the fact that I did it. But can I be honest?
Yep.
I actually quite liked it.
Okay, so one...
It was fun.
You're incorrect. You're memory-holing the fact that we got forced to see Black Panther 2.
Oh, bloody hell, you're right. Oh, damn. I've managed to erase that whole part of my life.
How could you forget the water bongos that opened the borders?
Yeah. How could I forget the solution was to dry his back out?
Moving on. So we watched that absolute turd. Go and watch our prior review on the website. Other than... Oh, no, we watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3 as well, didn't we?
Oh,
that was
God.
Okay.
Yeah, I suppose Guardians was all right.
But the problem we have is they're all ultimately forgettable. They're on a conveyor belt. They feel like...
As you can tell by the fact that I forgot all of them. The only reason I think Doctor Strange was a bit more memorable for me was, one, because the writing quality was so shockingly bad, and two, it was a Sam Raimi film, and I really like Sam Raimi films, and you could tell how constrained he was in that project, although he still managed to get a little bit of his flair in there.
Yeah, the only decent film that they've made since, blimey, maybe Guardians 2, I would say, is Spider-Man No Way Home.
And oh, even yeah, that, I watched that one as well. Why have I managed to completely erase all of these films from my brain?
That one was late 2021, though, so I think you're excused.
Yeah,
that was the only multiverse film that worked because it was the jingling keys of, don't you remember when things were better? And here is another respectful
send-off. Don't you remember
the
Sam Raimi Spider-Man films? Those good ones and the third one.
And the Amazing Spider-Man films, which I really like. I will still defend them, and I enjoyed as a kid.
And even the third Sam Raimi Spider-Man film has gained quite a lot for me just by contrast to all of the other MCU rubbish that they've been putting out ever since. And that includes the scene, you know, where Peter accidentally punches MJ right in the face, although maybe he's literally me. That's a joke.
For legal reasons.
I'm not quite that Sigma.
I know what you mean, though. So this is something that the prequels have taken on an aspect of. Retrospectively, these were earnest attempts at making innovative films. And while the quality may not have been excellent, except Revenge of the Sith, because that's really good, the films were not actively insulting their audience base. So while there were a few missteps here and there, while the CGI wasn't great, while the characterization might have been more shallow than better films, or even prior films in the case of the Star Wars trilogy, they weren't alienating and taking for granted the people that watched them and that had built up the franchises to such an extent where you could make prequels and sequels.
I mean, even the prequels in themselves, even though they faced so much criticism, built up enough of an extra dimension to the Star Wars universe outside of what had been presented in the original trilogy, that it created so many spin-offs and a new lore and a new fan base all of its own of people around our age who had so much more to sink their teeth into than anything that has been released under Disney.
Yes, and although I have criticisms of this film, which I think we will get into shortly, I appreciated that they brought back many characters that lots of people had a reverence for, that they had nostalgia for, and they didn't denigrate them like they did Luke Skywalker drinking alien breast milk. Lots of them got their moment, including Channing Tatum's Gambit, who never had his moment.
I was going to say, so I wasn't aware of this. Was Channing Tatum in the works for doing a Gambit
you
film?
You didn't know about the cancelled Gambit movie?
I was going to say, it must have been cancelled when Fox got bought out by Disney, correct?
Yes.
Because I was able to pick all this up by the fact that all Gambit is talking about, they're all going, yeah, we need to reclaim our pet, or something that may have happened, you know, I might have been able to do something.
So what happened is, after X-Men Origins Wolverine completely tanked in 2009, Channing Tatum had been lined up to play Gambit, but he had a scheduling conflict.
Wasn't Gambit in X-Men Origins Wolverine?
He was played by a different character.
Yeah, I was going to. Yeah.
And so what had ended up happening was, ahead of Deadpool being created and Hugh Jackman retiring as Wolverine, Fox was scrambling as to how to continue the X-Men universe. They'd already had Days of Future Past in the works, so that was a success, and they were setting up Apocalypse. They wanted to include Gambit and Apocalypse, but Channing Tatum said, I want to do a heist movie, a small, low-budget mutant thief film, because my dad's Cajun, I can do the accent, and I really love Gambit in the X-Men cartoon show.
I didn't realize his father was Cajun.
Yes, so authentic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so they were trying to develop a Gambit movie for ages, and it had three different directors attached, including right up until the deadline of 2019 when Disney bought Fox, Gore Verbinski was going to do it.
The Pirates of the Caribbean director?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
But that's how much turmoil the movie was
in. So what it sounds like is that it was a typical Fox disaster.
It was in production hell, yes. And so Gambit, Channing Tatum never got to play Gambit, and now the film has given him the opportunity to have a pretty good send-off and a pretty faithful adaptation of Gambit, given by the display of his powers and his costume.
Yeah, I mean, there seemed to be a lot more respect for most of the comic book characters featured in this than, again, most of the recent Marvel slop that's been coming out. None of this to say that the film isn't complete slop. It absolutely is.
It's proper Funko Pop slop.
Ask me 3 or 4 months from now, I probably won't be able to remember a single thing that happened, except for maybe one or two of the gags, because I think one of the good things about the Deadpool films, one of the things that kind of work in its favor, and this is the same with the first and the second one, which are also, may I say, they were very successful, kind of broke ground in allowing for Fox to go to the R-rated direction that led to Logan. Both completely forgettable films in terms of the actual plot and characters, other than Deadpool himself. So there was a lot in this film that I was glad that you didn't really need to remember, because I'm not going to remember Deadpool 2. I know Cable was in it. The rest of it, straight out one ear, in one ear, out the other.
Ryan Reynolds joked that they didn't focus test well with the audience, which is why we didn't bring them back. Josh
makes
Brolin
sense.
Wanted to be Cable. Zazie Beetz wanted to be Domino. No, wait. Is that it? Domino? Mm-hmm. She was Domino. And they both just got passed over. Marvel were like, no, thank you.
Yeah. But one of the good things about it is the fact that Deadpool as a character is so rapid fire with the jokes, and the film itself is so rapid fire with all of the jokes that it throws out, that if one joke doesn't work, if three jokes in a row don't work, as sometimes happens in this film, there will be one less than a minute later that might at least get a little chuckle out of you. And there are plenty of little funny gags here and there, a few bit funny bits. I mean, my favorite part of the entire film was the montage where he's going around trying to find the different Wolverines, particularly Cavalrine.
Yes, okay.
Because I was not expecting. And also, comic accurate height Wolverine, yeah. Finally.
and Patch from the comics and the crucified X-Men cover. They had John Burns Wolverine fighting the Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
They had one from Mutant Massacre with the obvious 90s hair, which was interesting. I do want to pick up on the Cavill one, because I think this entire film is taking the piss out of Black Adam as well.
I've not watched Black Adam, so...
You haven't seen that
car crash. Of course I've not watched Black Adam.
Good for you, because...
I know The Rock was very proud of it until it came out, and then he wasn't all of a sudden.
He kept saying that the hierarchy of power in the DC universe is about to change in all the marketing. Deadpool references that in here, and then when Cavill shows up, Ryan Reynolds says, "Don't worry, we'll treat you much better than those assholes down the street." Everyone is aware that they wasted an opportunity to keep Henry Cavill as Superman. And
Netflix wasted the opportunity to keep him as Geralt in The Witcher as well. Sadly, Cavill has kind of jumped from one project to another that's completely wasted him in one way or another. Although I still stand that I still enjoy Batman v Superman.
Batman v Superman is a great movie. And the interesting thing about Cavill is he's very much like Ryan Reynolds in that he has a deep reverence for all of the characters he wants to play. He wants to be involved in the script writing. He wants to ensure that they're faithful portrayals. And the absolute hacks at the top of the production companies keep falling out with him because they want to insert total current thing year bollocks into their productions, which clashes with what the audience want. And that's why these things get tied up in production hell.
On current year thing, one of the other jokes that stuck with me and that I found was funny was that there is a tiny little bit of nod and a wink towards the audience here and there, where, for instance, Cassandra gets up out of her wheelchair and he goes, "Oh no, ableism, we're going to get cancelled for this one." There's a few little
nods. He says the woke mob at one point.
Yeah, he says the woke mob, and Wesley Snipes, who I really was not expecting to show up as Blade, says retarded. So I actually saw quite a few people on social media freaking out about that and saying how the film was trying to direct itself towards the right-wing mob and try and win them over. No, what it's trying to do is actually win nerds over, people who like these stories in the first place and don't want them censored unnecessarily. But one of my favorite jokes near the beginning was that little party he's got where all of his friends are there. There's the older white gentleman he's speaking to, and he goes, and you cut into the middle of their conversation, and he goes, "Here's and that's my opinion on abortion, free markets, general healthcare, all of these hot button political topics." And he goes, "And I won't talk about them again." The guy puts his finger up, he's like, "No, no, no," and then walks away.
Yeah, it was a reference as well to the fact that he didn't want him to have speaking lines in the first film, because he's one of the mercenaries that shows up at the bar in Deadpool 1, and then immediately cuts away from political topics other than to ridicule the people that constantly want to talk about it. And if they are courting the right wing, then good job, because it's about to become the highest earning rated R film worldwide. Already has the highest opening box office domestically for a rated R film, is on track to make well over $1 billion after a couple of years of total financial and critical flops. And the weirdest thing about this is that one of the writers for this worked on She-Hulk and The Marvels. So I can only hope that Ryan Reynolds drowned out her contributions.
It might be one of those things where this person, I'm assuming woman, she, yeah, where she maybe provided a script draft that then got reworked and reworked and reworked and reworked. Or it might be that she contributed to things like Cassandra, who was, for me, easily the worst part of the film.
I think the inclusion of the TVA at all is the worst part of the film. Because
yes,
there is a bit of schizophrenia about this film where it critiques the multiverse, it critiques the Marvel Cinematic Universe's missteps, but then ties itself inextricably into Kang, Loki seasons 1 and 2, the Time Variance Authority, has diverse black women show up to be the girl.
Oh yeah, there is quite a bit of diversity in the film that's obviously just part and parcel of Marvel and Disney at this point.
Yeah, so it grafts itself onto the failures of the MCU while ridiculing it. So even though it was entertaining in that it said all the things that I liked, it's bound up in a continuity which is ultimately going nowhere. I found that to be quite a confusing decision.
Well, the thing was, it felt as though that was probably a part of the making of this film that was forced on them. If you want to make the next Deadpool film, Ryan, and if you want Hugh Jackman to be part of it, so you need the big Disney books to get Jackman back in, which is a joke they make right at the beginning of the film, where he's saying, you know, "I thought the Disney money would have brought you back." Then you're going to have to tie it in. But at the same time, it feels like it's an attempt to try and carve out its own little space for this as well, because it's set in a distinctly different universe.
It's like 1005, I think, is the universe.
Something like that, as opposed to 616, the sacred timeline. as they were calling it, which might have been established in Loki or something, but I don't care.
I think 616 was...
Well, no, I know 616 is the normal Marvel universe, but the fact that they're calling it the Sacred Timeline felt really out of nowhere for me. But by the end of the film, this universe, which in a very meta sense, Paradox, the real antagonist of the film until Cassandra shows up, is essentially playing the part of a heavy-handed and impatient editor who wants to eliminate, cut the whole thing out so that he can save himself some time and presumably save everybody a load of money. He wants to act as the heavy-handed editor to say, nobody ever cared about Deadpool. It was only caring about Wolverine. Even really the X-Men films, people only ever really cared about Wolverine, which for the Bryan Singer ones was probably true because he was treated as the main character anyway. We need to get rid of it. But by the end of the film, they've saved it. They've put vitality back into the into the timeline. So they're allowed to have their own wacky adventures with a new Wolverine packaged over here in the corner. It'll probably be the case where if they want to bring Deadpool in for some big crossovers with more Avengers in the future, then they'll do that. But if there's more Deadpool films in the future, I'm hoping that this is indicating that they'll kind of just be their own thing.
So I don't think there are meant to be more Deadpool films in the future, but I do think this is setting up his inclusion and some of the other X-Men's inclusion in Secret Wars down the road. They'll probably turn Secret Wars into Avengers v. X-Men under the rubric of some overarching villain pitting them against each other.
Either way, they've hedged their bets, and if they do end up wanting to do more, or if Ryan Reynolds convinces them to do more, they have that wiggle room. They have that little space allotted in the corner for them.
I don't think they'll take much convincing given it's their only profitable entry for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But on the weird point about 616, if I remember correctly, Marvel's mainline cinematic universe was called Earth 616, first in Spider-Man Far From Home by Mysterio, who was bullshitting about being from the multiverse. So did he know that exact universe?
The whole... Mysterio, Spider-Man Far From Home, that whole thing was a bait and switch trying to make it sound like, oh, we're doing the multiverse. Oh, we're not actually doing the multiverse. And then the year after, they go, we are doing the
multiverse.
And then
how did they know?
And Mysterio was correct, even though he was lying. Just ignore the contradictions. Ignore that it's a massive plot hole. This is the Marvel universe.
Okay, well, speaking of multiverses, I think we have to address the other
character. Sorry, there was one other funny thing. One other joke, which was with the TVA, to be fair, which was when he's in the base of operations, when he first gets there and Paradox is trying to convince him to come over to the Sacred Timeline. He starts playing like, oh, here's what could happen. And he sees Thor crying over Deadpool and Deadpool's... Wait, why is Thor crying over me? What's going on? I found that quite amusing.
Yeah, they switched him out with Loki in the Dark World footage, and I don't think they're going to use that in Secret Wars, but I suppose it would be a funny callback if they decided to do it. Speaking of someone who's probably going to be in Secret Wars now, someone we've referenced, how did you feel about how they handled Wolverine? Because I was very trepidatious after the love we showed for Logan.
Yeah, I love Logan. I'm kind of mixed on this because, one, I'm very, 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 very glad that they didn't resurrect that Logan. They go out of their way at the beginning to show that the sacrifice that Logan made at the end of his film was an actual sacrifice and that he died for real.
And then they desecrate his grave.
And then they desecrate his grave, and then Deadpool uses his corpse as a weapon, and he even uses the claws for himself to defeat all of the TVA guys who are there, which is honestly quite a fun action sequence. I've got to be honest there.
I did object, as I did in Black Adam, to the gratuitous use of random pop songs that didn't necessarily pertain to the fight sequences they were laid over.
That's kind of a Deadpool thing at this point. He's been doing that ever since the very first one. That first one that starts with the large action sequence set to pop music.
They could have chosen better songs at least.
Oh, fair play. I wasn't really paying that much attention to the song choice myself because it just became a mush of awful music, which I hate anyway. So I was paying more attention to the action that was on screen, which was fine enough. It was fun. So yeah, there is that part of me that says, oh, I should be annoyed that they're desecrating Wolverine's grave. But at the end of the day, I don't really care as much anymore. I don't really have anywhere near as much investment in this. As far as I'm concerned, Logan acts as the full stop for the Fox universe, and this is a small epilogue addendum that's been put onto the end of it, which is somewhat more respectable. Honestly, the very fact that he's actually dead and they kept him dead in the first place was enough for me to be respectful enough. The rest of it was like, well, yeah, this is what Deadpool would do. And it's kind of wacky fun. It's not trying to be anything more than it needs to be. It's not trying to be a lofty statement about humanity. It's not trying to hammer you over the head with a message other than Deadpool's a guy who's always been a bit of a loser. He wants to be a hero. Can he be a hero? Yes, I guess he can be a hero. Also, here's another Wolverine who's in the same dilemma because he's the worst Wolverine ever who also redeems himself. So it's a simple message, a simple story outside of all the time travel bollocks. And I didn't really care as much. I was like, yeah, of course they were going to do that. And it was quite funny.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.